Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365 Copilot.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. And man, it's been a hectic week here, and it's going to continue to be hectic for quite a while here as we go throughout the fall. It seems like fall continues to be a busier and busier season of life for me. One of the big exciting things in my household is my oldest son is going to kindergarten for the first year. And it's, I mean, hey, I don't know what to expect. Some of you guys that are dads and moms, you already know what to expect. You've been through the whole rigmarole. It's a whole new beginning for us. Making sure he's ready to go and kindergarten orientation and getting him ready to go each night, you know, prepping him, the routine. Like, it's just it's a new beginning for us. It's something we haven't charted. So a lot happening in that regard as far as what's going through my mind. And, man, we are just going full bore. You know, my wife has started field hockey, so I am trying to continue doing all the day-to-day stuff. But, you know, she's got some evenings wrapped up coaching, and I know it's been hectic for her. And hey, it's just a busy season. I'm thinking about preparations. I've started some of my hunting preparations for this fall. This past weekend, I planted a food plot, and I'll touch base about that a little bit in the start of this episode. But when I did this this food plot, it really started to make me think about, what do you do if a food plot fails this time of year? And I've had it happen to me in the past, and I've learned from some mistakes, and I've also learned some things that seem to help alleviate a failed food plot, specifically when it comes to drought stress, which we are going through a little bit of a drought period right now. And I thought it'd be a good time to talk about little watch outs and little things you can do to fix drought stricken food plots that will sometimes occur with your fall planning in the summer. So I'm going to dive into this episode. Shout out to our partners, Radix Hunting. Check out the M-Core cell cameras. I just put a couple out on some mock scrapes this weekend. Easiest camera I have ever set up as far as cell cameras. The setup was simple, and I just still can't get over the image quality of the cameras themselves, whether it's the video or the images. Also, check out their blinds. The Monarch Series blinds has a lot to offer you guys at an awesome price point. Huntworth. So couple cool announcements for Huntworth. Number one, Silent X cold weather stealth gear. It is an ultra quiet windproof clothing. New, check it out. It's called Silent X. And also, right now, if you shop at huntworthgear.com and you use the code PRE30, that's PRE30, you can save 30% on this preseason sale on anything on the website, excluding the clearance. And this will end September 1st at midnight. So make sure, if you have gear you want to get, whether it's early season, mid-season, or late season, make sure you go to Huntworth and save yourself 30% off. That's a big savings, guys. Let's see, we've got Little Mountain Outfitters. Little Mountain Outfitters is a archery company that I think stands out compared to other places that I have been personally. I think you got some great customer experiences, you got great quality gear, and a lot of knowledge in that shop to help you with what you need. And when it comes to that local archery feel, some of you folks might not have that close by, go to littlemountainoutfitters.com and you can still get some of that experience through their website and the gear they have available to you. And the cool thing is, if you go to their website, number one, anything you buy, you're supporting local business. It might not be local to you, but it is a small local business. And number two, if you use the code WOODSMAN10, WOODSMAN20, 10, WOODSMAN10, you will get 10% off of your next purchase when you buy something at Little Mountain Outfitters. So check out those awesome partners, and we're going to dive into some food plot talk here. Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year. So I talked about a food plot that I was going to be planting here a couple episodes ago, and I just did it this past weekend. The food plot is at a property that is about 4 hours from my house, so it takes a lot of planning, a lot of timing, and everything else to do. And with that, normally, you know, I've talked about my no-till approach and how I do that on a lot of food plots. A lot of time what I have to do in order to make my no-till system work is I'll have to do a little bit of herbicide spraying. I'll use glyphosate to terminate weeds earlier in the year. I talked about that on a previous episode here a few weeks ago. You should go listen to that if you have not. And I'm trying to manage the above-ground biomass in order to broadcast seeds without using a drill and without using tillage. Well, there's a problem. I started that process in the springtime for this food plot that's 4 hours away. I cleaned the field up, and I had every aspiration of going out to plant Nitro Boost in that food plot so I could get some biomass, I could feed some wildlife, and do some good things and prep the soil to plant clover, carbon load, something along those lines. Well, guess what? I did not get back out there since whatever it was, April, that I was out there and I cleaned the field up. So there was all kinds of weeds. There was perennial grass to start, and there was giant wads of annual grass. I think the perennial base was pretty low because I killed it. I do think that helped me, but there was just so much above ground biomass. And in my experience, when it comes to broadcasting a no-till food plot without a drill, there is a level of above-ground biomass that can be too much. It's hard for me to explain, but a lot of the time, it has something to do with when the weeds get above my chest, when it gets between waist and chest high, when they're consistently that high, and the population is thick to the point where you stand in that plant material and you look down, you have a really, really hard time seeing the soil surface when those plants are standing vertically. That's the best way I can describe it, but it can get too thick to broadcast into, and I don't have the consistency. Well, I had that going on here. And the other problem I've been having, too, is just getting out there on a consistent routine basis to plant every spring and summer to run the Nitro Boost and the carbon load system. I love that system. It's not a convenient system for the food plot that's 4 hours away from me. I can run that system on my closer food plots when I can time rains. I can get out there, you know, for, you know, a 20-minute drive or whatever and do the herbicide treatment or do the weed management or the fertility management, things like that. I can't do that as consistently on this food, on this property. And I decided the thing that was going to make the most sense for me on this food plot was to put it into a perennial chicory and clover. So one thing I have noticed, and this is from the world of agriculture, a lot of my farmers, when we start a perennial hay crop, whether that is just a strict grass hay crop or maybe there's alfalfa involved with that, I've had a little bit better consistency in planting with tillage in those crops. Now, not always. There's some exceptions. I've done those in no-till and have had some successful, but there's a couple of caveats to that. Alfalfa, I've done some no-till, and I've had good luck with it. So I'm not discouraging you guys from no-tilling perennials. However, with the amount of junk that I just described in this field, and the timing that I had and wanted to plant, there was no way I was going to terminate that and I was going to broadcast seed. I didn't have a drill. I didn't have equipment to get that seed, you know, just under the soil surface and protect it. I also had a lower than desired pH. I had some wood ash that I saved from my fire, which when I burn wood in the wintertime, I will save that wood ash, and that wood ash is going to give me sources of potassium, phosphorus. It's high in carbonate, which will increase my pH. It's a pretty nice soil amendment. So what I decided to do is till this food plot. I incorporated the wood ash and everything else into this field, and then I broadcasted it. Couple things I learned. First of all, I had the people who own the property. They had access to a rototiller, so it was powder. It was fine. And I think I might have done one other food plot in my lifetime with a rototiller. But, I mean, for those of you who have a garden, you know what that's going to look like. And they tilled it up, so that kind of took a workload off of me that all I had to do was broadcast some stuff and level the field out. Well, a little pause here of why I know God is good. This is what happened to me this weekend. I took my wife's car out to this place in western Pennsylvania to plant this food plot instead of my truck. And I normally will take my truck, and I would normally take my truck to include, you know, an ATV and my cul-de-packer chain drag that I built. I didn't bring that with. And thank goodness I didn't, because my wife calls me on Saturday and says, my truck broke down. She was driving it and it broke down. Turns out the water pump went. So I actually got up Sunday morning, drove home, and thank the Lord, my dad came to rescue my wife alongside the road, brought her home, and then my father-in-law came up, figured out it was the water pump. They filled it up with water, limped it home, and got the parts I needed. So I came home Sunday from the four-hour drive and ripped my truck apart, and thankfully I got it back together and it was all good. So I was so happy that that happened that way, and it wasn't with me and my two boys on an interstate driving down and the truck broke down. That would have been a nightmare. So I told you that little story because I didn't have my chain drag. So I'm out there, and I broadcasted the wood ash. And I'm like, man, I got to figure out a way how to incorporate this. So I actually did something kind of funny. I took my brother-in-law's tractor, and I took a pallet skid. And, of course, you guys know for any time you've looked at a pallet, you've got the side where the forks go into, and then you've got the side where it would basically be, you know, crossways with the with your posts or whatever, your beams or whatever of the post. Of the skid. So what I did is the section where the forks would go into, I towed a skid behind the tractor that way. And what that did was it pulled dirt. It actually dug in a little bit and pulled the dirt, and it leveled. It did two things. It leveled out those ridges you get with a rototiller sometimes. And then it also kind of dug into the dirt a little bit, and it helped incorporate all that wood ash, that it wasn't just a powdery dust of wood ash on the top of the soil surface. Then what I did was, once that leveled it out, I broadcasted the clover chicory seed on top, and then I turned the skid 90 degrees so that it was going across the wood boards, and all it did was scratch the surface and press it down and level it out a little bit more. And I went the opposite direction. Worked phenomenal. I was thrilled with how well a skid worked towing it behind a tractor. But I did all that and left the food plot. So I share that with you because now I'm looking at this food plot, and I've told you before, I'm not a big fan of tillage. Tillage is a tool. I shared with you why I use this. I wanted to incorporate some stuff. I wanted to knock down the perennial and annual weed thatch that was there and create a seed bed to establish a good perennial food plot. But the problem I don't like tillage is it pulverizes all the living microorganisms in the soil. It's tough on the soil biology. It's tough on the moisture. I mean, we've created a system where we've oxidized the soil. We've mixed it up like cake batter. It's dry powder. Now we got to beg and pray for rain. And that made me think, what do we do when you do all this work to your food plots and they fail. I've had it happen to me in the past, and I thought now would be a great time as guys are planting, they're actively planting now, and you've got high hopes for this food plot come fall. What happens if you come out in a few weeks and it failed, and you go, oh crud, what do I do now? I'm going to talk a little bit about that here, and I'm going to try to keep it fairly brief. So the first thing let's discuss is, why did the food plot fail? Is it strictly from drought, or is there some other underlying feature? I'm always going to go back to, did you take a soil sample? Is there anything in that soil, nutrients, lack thereof, or excess, or something going on in that food plot that you did not address properly that could have impacted the way that food plot got established, depending on what you planted? So if it failed and you're like, well, I don't know why it didn't grow. I threw 100 pounds of triple 19 out, and you know, I bought this lime product that so-and-so was saying was so great, and I just threw it out there and it didn't work. Well, before you go spending any more money than you already have for it to fail, take a soil sample. Put some dirt in a bucket at a couple places, mix it around, put it in a bag, send it to a lab. You can go to your county extension agency. Sometimes you can go to feed mills. You can send it directly to Penn State University. You can send it directly to labs. I will help you. You can reach out to me. I will gladly help you with recommendations on soil samples. There's a lot of things you can do to get that information in place. But let's just say you've done all that. You've done all of your preparations, fertility, seed choice, everything is right. Now the next question that I have to ask from the food plot sense is, how did you plant it? Did you manage weeds? Did you use tillage or no-till? What does the soil actually look like? I'm trying to lay a foundation of why and what could be. If you use tillage, like I just talked about, did you plant close to that planting? Did you plant close to that tillage, meaning till it the same day, plant the same day? Or was there a delay and then you planted it? That could be a big difference in what your weed setup is. If you tilled it one day, waited a week and planted it, and you did nothing else to give yourself a buffer, you could have given weeds a 5-day head start. And if you're planting an annual food plot like Vitalizes Carbon Load, or you're planting a brassica food plot, or you're planting cereal grains or whatever, and you give winter annual weeds a 5-day advantage, they can choke out your food plot over time. So planting close to it, or if you're going to delay that tillage and let it sit, if you're going to do tillage and let it sit and then plant, incorporate a herbicide pass or a second tillage pass to terminate that next batch of weeds. That way you can time your planting of your crop the same time everything has been wiped clean from the slate. So that's a tillage thing. We talk about no-till a lot, and no-till helps a lot with soil moisture holding capacity. It's time for fall food plots, and I encourage you to look no further this year than planting Vitalized Seeds Carbon Load. Guys, this is a highly diverse plant mix of grains, grasses, brassicas, and legumes that is extremely winter hardy. It gives great tonnage and it's browse tolerant. This thrives after the nitro boost and it acts as a weed barrier in the springtime, and not to mention all the benefits it does for your native wildlife, giving ample tonnage and sequestering nutrients from deep within the soil. Check it out at vitalizeseed.com, where you can get your order today and learn more about soil health and providing great tonnage to wildlife this fall.
Listen, landowners, let Stephen Chilcote, land and timber consultant, turn your land into a deer and wildlife magnet. With over 25 years of land and timber management experience, Steve's approach optimizes food and cover to attract deer and increase hunting success for his clients. Visit us online at chilcoteforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510 to make sure your land is the ultimate hunting paradise.
But I have noticed that when you're early on in doing broadcast seeds into a no-till system, it can be challenging on some soils. Soils that have high clay, maybe not a lot of organic matter, but you're like, hey, I want to use no-till. I see the benefits of it. I want to get a system that's simple for me. You can implement that, but it can be rough, especially under times of extreme stress like drought. I'll give you an example. If we don't have a lot of above ground biomass, let's just say it's self-inflicted, like I talked about earlier, where I was spraying a food plot and killing all the above ground biomass. Well, that can have an adverse reaction because you're exposing it to the sun. Depending on your soil situation, you can actually really, really cook the top of the soil with the sun itself. And it'll create a really hard layer of soil on the top. It can create a little bit of surface compaction because it'll dry that out. It all depends. But all I'm saying, and I'm sure you guys have seen this, where you can get really, really hard soil surfaces after dry spells. Maybe you did plant something. You've been trying to plant something. Maybe it's a new food plot you cleared out, right? And you cleared it out in the woods and did everything in the spring or the summer where you leveled the ground and you got everything prepped to go. And then you thought, once we get some rain here in the forecast, I'm going to plant it. And maybe there was a little bit of moisture when you were doing that work to smooth that food plot out, and then it got hot, it got dry, the sun was beating down on it, and man, it just made everything really, really rock hard. And you wanted to use no-till. Well, let's just say you had a weekend like I did. You planted your food plot thinking, well, there's a little bit of rain in the forecast, I hope it grows. Maybe you even got a little bit of rain before or after, and you thought, I'm going to try this. And then the spigots turn off. And I found in that really, really hard soil surface for no-till, sometimes we can really, really struggle to get those little bitty roots for the small seeds. I mean, you're talking your brassica seeds, your cereal grains, your clovers. If you've got a really, really hard surface layer, it can be really hard for those little roots to push through a top layer of hard soil. I'm having a hard time thinking about another way to explain it, but I'm sure if you guys have food plotted enough, or if you're looking at your drought-stricken food plot now, trying to make a decision, like this is commonly what I see. We got to figure out how are we going to address this hard soil. If the weather changes, you can still broadcast seeds if you get consistent rain. What I often find is if we have a drought period, the ground gets really, really hard. You see a weather forecast of rain coming. We broadcast seed on top of it right before the rain, and we only get a tenth or two. And then we go another 10, 14 days with no rain. That's not enough to drive that seed, to soften the ground, drive that seed in there a little bit, and allow that seed to take enough moisture in, push those roots through that hard soil, and get going. I think you have less failures of this drought stress the longer you do no-till, the longer you have actively growing plants, like using that carbon load nitro boost system, the two-pass system. The more you use that, the loamier you can make your soil, more resistant to stresses like drought and things like that, the easier this is. This is one of those that I've experienced on new food plots or food plots that have had a lot of tillage or management that really wasn't soil health oriented. So that's one thing I'll notice. So how do we alleviate that? So let's just say we planted mid-August. Now we're going out in mid-September to look at these food plots. You're going around, you're checking cameras, you're doing last minute preparation, you're checking your food plot. You're like, oh crap, this thing isn't looking real good. I highly suggest, first of all, going out within the first 10 to 14 days after planting and look what you got. Look and see what your plant spacing is. It's really, really hard to judge food plot populations. I have learned over the years how to have an eye for it, and is my plant spacing right? I've heard a couple of different theories on different food plots of how many, you know, seeds per acre or what the distance should be in all your plant species. That is really, really tough to gauge. I think the easiest thing that I can tell you is if you really want to know your plant population, look up what you planted. Let's just say you planted a brassica food plot and you planted 4 pounds per acre or 3 pounds per acre or 5 pounds per acre, whatever that is. Just look up the average number of seeds per pound on the internet. Then, once you have that, take a hula hoop. You can figure, make a box, a PVC box that's 1 square foot. Set that in a section of the field and count all the plants that have emerged in that box. That's a great way to learn, is my plant population right with what I planted? Did I underseed, did I overseed, or do we have a failed food plot because of something we're talking about right now, like drought? You can do that, and it'll learn. I've learned over the years to just see, this isn't filling in the way I want. I've got not enough plants per acre in this section of field. That's probably going to get taken over by weeds. So go out that first 10 to 14 days. That's critical. If you're getting rain, it should continue to grow. But if it's looking sparse in 10 to 14 days from when you planted, start your preparations. If it doesn't rain another 7 to 10 days, you could be in for end of September needing to reseed and salvage a food plot. So I had this happen to me a couple years ago. We did a no-till system, broadcasting into standing buckwheat and some other cover crops, had a dry spell go through. Hardly anything came up. It was just totally poor. What did emerge, we had rain close to planting, but then it shut off. We planted in early August. The rain shut off. What did come up got droughted out, and we just had no life in that. And we went for basically 6 weeks with very, very, very poor rain. Now, you could do one of two things in that situation. If you have something to scratch the soil surface to alleviate that compaction, I'm not talking about like serious tillage. Sometimes like a chain drag, a harrow, something that's just going to ruffle that soil surface up if it got baked a little bit and it seems sealed off. Scratch it a little bit before you do your next planting. Obviously, we would love to see a little bit more moisture in the forecast, a little bit of rainfall, but that will help. You also can just do broadcast. You can broadcast into that, hopefully ahead of a rain. The example that I had the year that this last happened to me was about 4 years ago. We went the week leading into the statewide archery season. Statewide archery season was like October 1st or October 2nd that year, September 30th, something like that. And that week, like on Tuesday, so, you know, season opens Saturday, and Tuesday we're out there replanting because we had a big hurricane rainstorm coming through, and we knew there was going to be a high volume of rain. Number one, we didn't have time to scratch the surface, like I was just talking about earlier. We didn't have the time. I don't even remember if we had the right equipment to do that, but there was a lot of rain coming. And when you have a volume coming and you're confident about it, so a lot of the time it'll soften the ground up enough, you get enough rain force to push seeds into the ground and get seed to soil contact. So we went out and broadcasted before that rain. All we did was reseed. That will work sometimes. I guess the moral of the story as I'm talking about this is doing something is better than nothing. Seed blends. If you went out and planted a multi-species blend, you planted carbon load, you planted a perennial food plot that failed, you planted, gosh, who knows, whatever, what all's out there that we're planting in food plots anymore. I can't keep track of all the different seed blends. Let's say you had something that was larger seeds. Maybe you had late planted peas, soybeans, maybe you had a mix that for some reason had some buckwheat or sunflowers in it. Any of those larger seeds, I avoid planting this time of year. I think we're too late. We're not going to get the biomass. And the bigger the seed, the more energy it needs to get established, the more rainwater it needs. And I think you're probably wasting your time. So if you had a food plot that was dominantly large seeds, I think you're probably past that. You're into salvage mode now. And my favorite thing to do for salvage mode is one of three things or some type of combination. The first thing that I would look to do if I was going to salvage a food plot is I would look at buying brassicas. Vitalized Seed offers a straight brassica mix now, and that would be an awesome opportunity to broadcast small seeds before rain and try to get a food plot reestablished after a drought period. Brassicas are one of my, you could throw tillage radish out into a gravel driveway, and if it gets rain, the stuff's going to grow. It's not hard to get that established as long as we got the rainfall coming. You might have a dry period throughout August, September. It might turn on in hurricane season, depending on where you're at. The other thing that I will use sometimes is just annual clover. I don't typically like to broadcast perennial clover in the fall. In this situation, if I planted 2 weeks ago or this last week perennial, but I tilled it and I'm optimistic with the forecast we're going to have enough rainfall, it should get established. But I don't like to do it that late, especially not when there's possible plant material on top, like the previous planting that we're not going to terminate. I don't want that to choke out a perennial planting. But an annual clover, your crimsons, your balances, your berseems, stuff like that, that's another good one. I will plant that in my geography until about the last week of September. My geography is southeastern Pennsylvania. So if you basically cut the state in half by about Interstate I-80, somewhere around there is a cutoff where if it's below there, I'd probably say the last week of September. If it's above there, you might be talking September 15th to have a little bit of biomass going into fall. That's not a hard and fast rule. It's just something that you might want to watch out for. But annual clovers will work to add in. The last thing, and you can broadcast these suckers into October, is cereal grains. I prefer wheat and triticale. Rye is not bad. Rye is a little bit more stringy. It can be a little bit more cumbersome to manage, and if you get too thick a rye planted, it can make a mess in the spring when it starts to grow out of that vegetative stage and it gets that high biomass. Depends on your deer pressure. I've seen it where the deer ate it so hard that it wasn't a problem, but I prefer wheat and triticale. You can do oats, but the problem with oats is if you plant them, late September into October, they're not going to get a lot of biomass. They will die out from a freeze. If you get a frost in mid-October, you're not going to get a lot out of those oats. But I do like oats. You can put those on in throughout mid-September most of the time. But I would lean, if you're talking about the end of September going into October and you still don't have a good food plot, I would look at doing about 50 to 100 pounds per acre of wheat or triticale and just broadcast it right out into that. So I think probably the way I would start this when I'm thinking about this is my annual clovers and my brassicas. Those are my preferred species that I'm going to plant sometime in that mid to end of September to salvage a food plot. I like them from the attraction standpoint. They're pretty easy to establish as long as we get consistent rainfall. I keep going back to that. If you don't have the ability, like let's just say the end of September stays dry, but now October is hurricane season or we start getting rainfalls and you want to make something grow, somewhere around the last week of September, I'm going to make a switch. I'm going to say strictly cereal grains. Wheat, triticale, those are my preferred cereal grain food plots. Again, I've broadcasted wheat and triticale on top of that, and a couple rains, it's amazing. I might try to use the picture, if I can find it, for the episode description. But I had this food plot 4 years ago I'm thinking about. We broadcasted tillage radish and wheat. I believe it was tillage radish and wheat the last week of September, and I went into a stand the first time I sat it on this one food plot. I think it was like the second, we were midway through October, I want to say it was like the 15th, so almost 3 weeks afterwards, and the amount of biomass that was out there was ridiculous. And it was just because the whole first week of October just rained repeatedly. And we just had enough rain to get stuff up and going. We had enough rain to soften that soil surface, keep those seeds viable, let those roots kind of penetrate through the top layer, and then start accessing nutrients and start accessing more of that soil moisture that was staying a little bit longer, and it just happened to work. Felt like I talked a little bit in circles on this episode. I had a lot going through my mind. It's been a really tough couple weeks here for me just planning. I've had some technical difficulties on the equipment side of things with podcasting and episodes and scheduling. It's just been really, really tough, and I wanted to do a salvage food plot episode. I had that planned in my head. However, it wasn't going to be this week. So I'm a little bit scatterbrained on that. I think I covered everything that I wanted to talk about. Look, if I'm sparking thoughts, but I missed something, or maybe I didn't make something clear, don't hesitate to reach out to me. Please do. You can reach out to me at Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Bear with me on Facebook. I'm a little slow to respond on Facebook. Instagram's a quicker bet, but I will respond to you on those eventually. Your best bet to communicate with me is pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email me. I would gladly walk you through your specific scenario the best I can, try to give you a little bit of insight on what to do if you have a problem and some kind of food plot failure. I've been there. I've made mistakes where either A, I didn't do anything, or B, I did the wrong thing and made it worse. I've also had some food plots that were very successful, planted the last week of September going into October. Most of the time this time of year, it's make or break. Drought stress will kill a food plot, and you just got to continue to stick with it. Walk your food plots, scout your food plots, continue to learn. Is it handling the drought stress? Is it not? Is there weeds coming in? Do I have to manage these weeds, get rid of them? You want to do your best to replace the stuff you don't want with something you do want, and it all revolves around rain. Watch the forecast and be patient. You can get a good food plot. I'm not telling you you're going to have that textbook food plot that you had anticipated planting mid-August, getting all these lush rains the end of August into September, and having this massive biomass, but you can have a green carpet that will feed deer through food plots and attract deer, attract wildlife for successful hunting throughout archery season and even into rifle season if you stick with it and you continue to watch and do something September into early October. My three species that I'm going to go to is annual clovers, brassicas, and cereal grains. I have done blends of them. A lot of the time, it's what do I want to see a little bit of a majority of. I might take the average seeding rate for those. Let's just say annual clover recommends a 5 or 6 pound of the acre, but I want to have annual clover, cereal grains, and brassicas. I might just take a third of each and blend them together. Whatever the recommended full seeding rate is, I might take a third of each of them and broadcast it out there and just try to get something growing and established. If you want a higher percentage of one, make it a higher percentage of it. It doesn't really make a difference. You're just trying to fill lateral space and get something growing to produce food. Next week or the following week, I'm hoping to have a primitive archery conversation I've had with a guest that I've had on the podcast before, and I want to bring him back. He's got a lot of cool stuff he wants to share with us, not just from the bow hunting end of things and the technical aspects of hunting with a stick bow, but also from the world of some new media outlets and some things that he's got going on in his life that are positive. So I'm hoping to have him on next week. If not, it'll be the following week. It'll be coming up soon. And we're going to start diving into some more episodes that I think are going to be revolving around scouting, going into season, preparations. And there's a good chance we're going to have some stories from the past. We're going to try to get some stories on here of learning experiences from mistakes. Some of those will be my own and possibly some guests. Guys, if you have things that you'd like to hear about on this fall's journey that we go through into hunting season. If you have specific episodes or people you'd like to hear from, hey, reach out to me. I already left my information on this podcast earlier about how to reach out to me. I'd love to hear about that. What things would you like to hear? We're getting into the heat of it now, guys. It's getting closer. It's soon time. I'm itching. I'm finally dusting my bow off and making sure that it's good to go. Again, everything that I've done up until this point is way behind schedule, but it's getting closer. I'm slowly getting my preparations, and when the time comes, I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to try to savor it and make the most of the time I get. Don't get frustrated. I've been frustrated here lately just because it seems like I've got a lot of things pulling me other directions. And I want to get my food plots, I want to get my scouting and my cameras and my bow and everything prepped, and I'm way behind schedule. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. One day at a time, and we'll get there. So hey, hopefully this episode helps somebody. Appreciate you guys listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Have a great week.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.